That was not the way. Not the way that was relayed.
That's fair. That's fair. It's fair, that to, was not, fair to call.
That was not relayed as a term of endearment. Nope.
It's fair to call that. Just yeah. You know. Yeah. I think it's interesting, right? We were talking last year. I don't know if you know this or not, but last year this time was season 2, episode 11.
Are we live?
We are live, of course.
Okay, good. Okay,
this is how we like to roll into this. I thought it was interesting that we didn't plan it to be this way, but episode 11 this year,
right,
is the final four episode, the same way that episode 11 last year was the final four episode.
That's very odd, isn't it?
It is. It's happenstance too, because we definitely did not, plan it to be that way. So. The fact that it is, I think it says, it's meant to be. It's meant to be right now.
Okay.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to all of you out there looking at myself and this good-looking gentleman to my, to my left on the screen, if you're looking.
North.
North if you're using a compass, although if we got into the existentialism of north and south, like what's really north and what's really south, in a planet that floated, and if you turned it upside down, nobody would fall.
Yeah, I don't know. There's too much science in general going on here with this solar eclipse coming and the path of totality, which I'd never heard of in my life, but now know everything there is. So,
ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to season 3, episode 11 of Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LeJour of Bridgeton Academy. We are happy to join you. And if you're listening on Spotify, it's fantastic. If you happen to be with us live right now, we are streaming live from all of my social media platforms. So on X, on Facebook, from my personal and my own Coach Gene Clemens account. On YouTube and on Twitch, not on Instagram, because Instagram takes a little bit more to set up. But we wanted to come and give you this pod, and hopefully you enjoy it and want to join us, because this is a very special pod for us. This is Final Four pod, and because we are T minus an hour plus away from the start of the Final Four, we wanted to come and give you guys our confidence picks right before we get there. But before we do that, Coach Whit, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I would say I'm doing very well for someone who has just got the power back on in their apartment in the last 24 hours. Big storm blew through here, which was going up the East Coast. We got more than a foot of snow. So the second big dump in about a week or 10 days, power out throughout the area. So I'm doing well, but woke up a little sluggish today after staying up to watch the games last night with some friends and MB, but made some lemons out of lemonade. I actually went skiing today, April skiing, which, is a little bit unusual for me anyway. And so had a nice Bloody Mary with lunch and then a beer or two. So I'm coming to you as someone who made the most out of what has been, I'm looking at golf season right now, but instead I'm skiing. So that's where we're at. Thank goodness for these games.
Well, I think lemons out of lemonade is just what people in Bridgeton, Maine, has just been, they've come accustomed to doing. This is not something new for you guys up here.
That is very true.
You have to be able to roll with the punches, or else you probably drive yourself crazy.
That is true.
In that area, but shout out to you and getting the most out of your, most out of your day.
I mean, full disclosure, Jack went with me, my son Jack, so he snowboarded. So, obviously I got a little, father-son time, which is always a bonus, so.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I have been running around, just got back from Las Vegas, had an opportunity to sit down and talk with Giants tight end Darren Waller and a couple 2024 draft hopefuls. Really interesting conversation, really interesting person. I think the one thing I love about interviews is it's not really anything salacious. I either want to get really, really deep into the conversation about, you know, the game and how the game is played, or I want to learn about stuff that you do that has absolutely nothing to do with the sport. Like, I'm not trying to get the tea. I'm not trying to like have a gotcha moment. I'm not necessarily trying to go viral on purpose. Like, that's not my goal in any of these conversations. It really is to try to, you know, learn more about the person and find out what they tick, or learn more about the game. And I think that having an opportunity to sit down with them and talk for as long, watching him, you know, I was pretty much with him for the entire day as he was going through these workouts with these young men, and, you know, had lunch together and watched him move, and, you know, his mindset, what he has going on in his life, all the stuff that he has overcome. It was really a great conversation. Make sure you check out that first article that dropped on Giants Country, shameless plug, and all that. And there's more content to come from that, because it was just a really, really awesome day. I was happy to have the opportunity to do it, and shout out to everybody that made that happen. I heard you sigh. I thought you were about to say something. I was going to lay out, but
no, probably just a relaxed sigh.
All right, so I want to start here. I want to start here because I want to start with the women's game. We saw the massive number that Iowa and LSU did in their game, and I'm really less like enamored with the number, because I think a part of sometimes what makes these big numbers is the novelty of it, right? Like, oh, this is something, and this is a wave, but is it sustainable? Is what I'm really more interested in. Are people here for the long term, or are they just here because of particular forces or particular storylines that make it intriguing? I know a lot of people are acting as if ESPN could have made this happen years ago. I've heard that narrative, and a lot of people saying, oh, it could have always been this if ESPN would have poured into it the way that they're pouring into it now. And I went, I don't think ESPN has done anything different. I think that the difference is that there are storylines that have appeared, and people have played into those storylines. And so now we're seeing the fruits of those storylines. I don't know if it's necessary that, well, ESPN just made this happen. They just pushed a button and all of a sudden women's college basketball, was more popular. I think this has to do more with the people involved than it does with the people pulling the strings.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, there's an old philosophical saying, right? When the student is ready, the teacher appears. So I would never discount or diminish the power of the media or ESPN for doing exactly what some people are claiming they're doing in this case, but I'm with you that I think it's more about the fact that people, for whatever reason, have more of an appetite, and it's just you know, and I hate to say the natural course of things, because that implies like we had to wait X long, but I think that's the deal. Like, I think there's a genuine sustainable interest there that is just is way beyond, you know, what ESPN has done differently, because I tend to agree with you. Now, I think they are taking advantage of an opportunity, but I think there's I think there's the college game, the WNBA, ESPN itself. I even heard of a sports bar somewhere. You probably know where it is. I don't know. I think it's in the South, but a sports bar strictly devoted to women's sports. You know, kind of neat when I saw that and heard that. So, you know, I think there's something happening, And, you know, it's just, it's kind of interesting because I don't think it's, you know, because I think we've seen the same sort of drama before that just wasn't followed in the same way.
Yeah.
And by the way, like, hey, I mean, this is a shameful plug, not a shameless plug. Is, you know, I've been telling you forever, hey, I'm going to lock in and watch some of this stuff. So I did the same thing everyone else is doing. I paid more attention than I generally have.
That's fair. But I think, like, at the end of the day, what we're looking at is a final four with two number one seeds, right? Two number one seeds, a number three or four seed, and
a couple of threes, I think.
Is it a couple threes? I didn't know if it was a three and a four, but either way.
Yeah, talking about the women's, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we're not talking about, like, the eighth seed making a run or the 12th seed making a run. If you look at the totality of the women's tournament, it's pretty much been the same women's tournament as it's always been. Like, the chalk is holding. The first few rounds were not as exciting outside of a couple scares. You know, a couple they could have lost, but they didn't. Like, no one was really upset. I mean, if you wanted to call Texas losing an upset, I guess you could, but they lost to a top three seed. So there's no shame in that. There's no shame in losing to a three seed. There's no Cinderellas in place. There have been no Cinderellas in place. And just because NC State hasn't seen a lot of success in the tournament in past seasons, that doesn't make them a Cinderella, because they're a three seed, which means that a lot of people believe that with the right circumstances, they had a chance to be here.
Agreed.
Now, if you juxtapose that with the men's game, what I would say is the thing that swings the meter back to the men's game is you don't know what's going to happen. Like UConn is number one, and UConn has been number one, and everybody probably thinks UConn's going to win the championship, right?
Yep.
Almost nobody outside of Whit LeJour, even with them being a one seed, had Purdue here right now. Most everybody had Purdue to be upset, and that is the parity that I think that the women's game still has to get to in order to consistently draw eyes. I also think this is something that probably isn't talked about enough. Women's sports all of a sudden being involved more in the sports betting atmosphere is going to help women's sports grow. Like, the fact that a lot of sports books have been hesitant to put women's college basketball on the betting sheets because of how chalkish the games are and how much they have to, like, inflate the lines in order to even get some action, I think that has hurt. That has hurt them being able to be fully embraced. But as you start getting these storylines, right, these Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese, or Caitlin Clark versus, or what would have happened if Paige Beckers, you know what? Let's start there. Last night, Iowa beat UConn, and I don't want to get into the controversy of the blocking call, no blocking call. I think if we're all going by the letter of the law, it's a block, right? The girl put her elbow out.
It's an illegal screen. I mean, yeah. Put her elbow. It wasn't just the chicken wing, though. It was also the extended, you're not
the
allowed to.
The leg.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So I don't think any basketball person is going to argue that. What they do argue, though,
and I've heard a lot of basketball people arguing it back and forth, but they'll argue that, you know, maybe they swallow that whistle in that particular situation. I don't know. Like, because I, you know, in real time, yeah, I was all about, hey, I'm not sure about that call, and what are you doing? And, you know, the person, you know, they had switched out a little bit on that screen, so it wasn't like someone was, they didn't have a wide open page, didn't have a wide open play there. There was some advantage gain for sure, but so in real time, I thought it was a horrible call. Slowed down on Twitter with all the replays I've seen. In the NBA, I know this. In the NBA, they're calling it every single time, like virtually every single time. That's getting called. Like you just don't. I mean, the regular season, for God's sake, that thing is getting called. But in the men's game, where illegal screens are, you know, obviously they're in both games, they're being committed all the time. I could see that one. You know, maybe it's called, maybe it's not, but 100% it's a foul. You know, and what happens if they make the play and score off that? Are we talking about the controversy that it wasn't called? And is that a bigger, right? Because now you get the people that are talking about, hey, you know, a foul is a foul, a penalty is a penalty. It doesn't matter. In the NFL, it goes down all the time that way, usually with regard to defensive pass interference. Like, wait a second. If it's a penalty in the first quarter, it's got to be a penalty in the fourth quarter, et cetera.
Yeah, my only problem with that is that if you go through that game, tell me you don't find an illegal screen being set.
No, I mean, you're going to find them.
And so if that's the case, if you're going to find an illegal screen being set during the game,
well, I've lost him again. I will say this. I know where Gene is going relative to if you're going to not call it earlier, then you got to call it then. I would say this. I can understand that point, but I tend to disagree too. Just speaking in from my own experience and late game situations with our guys, whether it's defense or offense, let's start with defense. We'll say, hey, look, we got to play defense without fouling late because the referees are prone to call fouls, say, particularly if you're on the road, right? Let's turn it around. When we're on offense and particularly in the days when we were running a lot of motion or read and react offense with screens away from the ball, I mean, late in games and particularly after timeouts and whatnot, we'd be saying, hey, listen, just keep the screens legal. I mean, keep the screens legal. Let's not, you know, and focus on the other part of the action, like, you know, try the quick ball movement or quick rip and drive and all the decision making that's outside of the actual screen. So that's what I would say. I don't know how many times, you know, whether that was just a drawn up play in that instance, or it looked to me like there's probably something they've run before, a little chase action with a my brain, I think it's the beer I've had, but obviously that comeback route, the pistol. So they ran a pistol with a little comeback screen. People do that pretty regularly late. You would have thought they could have run that without taking the chance for a foul call. And so I'm just telling you, minimizing fouls, and you hear college coaches talk about that as a key to the game anyway, like minimizing your fouling, usually on defense, but in this case, late game on offense, I think you make a case. You can't put it on the referees. I mean, that's the bottom line is what I'm saying. You can't put that on the referees. It happened, and it didn't have to happen. And there was a slip potential. There was a lot of things in that play that could have, resulted in a basket. Had the screener just stayed stationary. So, tough way as fans, though. Tough way to see the game end. Everyone wanted to see the game end in a different manner than that. I mean, that's the bottom line. But I'm glad to see Gene is back. And,
You got my full-blown analysis there while he was gone.
And I'm glad you were able to get it. I was actually listening on the phone as my computer was booting up. But, you know, shout out to StreamYard that when my computer goes down, because we're live out there, everything just keeps going. So it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, StreamYard needs to holler at me. I've been going 10 toes down with them for a while now. They really need to come in.
Are they like Cycle Bar and Heineken Zero as a
we need to add them to the list of people who of don't companies know. Really need to know that we've been boosting them from the start.
And I was at the Barkin' Chicken last night too, another sponsor that doesn't realize they're sponsoring us, and you know.
So I'm pretty sure they're happy to be sponsoring us for free. I know that much.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The interesting part for me, like I was saying, is that if you're not going to call it, you know, early, or you're not going to call it consistently, then maybe you swallow the whistle right there. And I know a lot of people probably feel the same way. It sucks that that's the way that you end. I don't think it was a, hey, we're trying to get Caitlin Clark in the final. I think that's stupid. Like, come on. Yeah. You know, what are we doing here? Plus, if we're being honest, and I like to try to be honest, I think that entire game is the NCAA women's runner-up game anyway, because I don't see either one of those teams beating South Carolina. And this is where I want to get to. They look utterly dominant.
Well, before we get there, because I know we're talking about your girlfriend, Dawn Staley. Is it Dawn Staley?
It is Dawn Staley. How do you not know? She's the legend.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, she's quickly ascending to my Mount Rushmore.
And I should say, for the loyal listeners, your former girlfriend, because based on what I watched here pre-pod, there's someone else in the picture that we may or may not want to bring into the...
You've known me long enough to know that someone might not be an accurate description.
That's true.
I do love Dawn Staley.
Yeah. So here, anyway, I had this debate with Paris Horn, my assistant, and you know, and actually some of our players here. So who you taking, Paige Beckers or Caitlin Clark? And I came down and heavy on the side of Caitlin Clark, and a few of the players agreed. Paris beforehand had strong supporter of Paige Beckers. So not to make last night's game a referendum, because that's obviously foolish, but after watching the last couple rounds of this tournament, I stand on my Caitlin Clark at this particular time analysis being slightly better. And I think with a higher ceiling too, because just a little bit more length. And what I gave Paige Beckers is, hey, might have a little more giddy up in there somewhere, but I think it's neutralized by the shot making, passing, length, and potential physical maturity down the line of Caitlin Clark. So anyway, I came out on the side of Caitlin Clark. And I did think UConn was going to win that game, too, because I thought UConn had more than Iowa had. Maybe not, given the people that are out. Where do you stand on that one?
So that's a great debate. I'll say this. I posted, and I may have even said so on the Talk Spicy podcast, that Caitlin Clark owes Paige Beckers money. Like she should pay her out, because if it wasn't for Paige Beckers back-to-back seasons having season-ending injuries last year's, which came pretty much at the beginning of the season where she missed the entire season, we're not talking about Caitlin Clark. Let's remember that both of these girls are in the same, they're in the same recruiting class. Who was the number one recruit in the nation? Paige McBuckets. Who was the woman who was the girl du jour as freshman? Paige Beckers. It was not Caitlin Clark. It was Paige Beckers, who already had a nickname when she walked into Stores, Connecticut, as Paige McBuckets. Caitlin Clark still doesn't have a nickname.
Right? Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I you know, it took Larry Bird a little while to get, you know, a little longer than Irvin Johnson to get on the, you know, national scene too, though. So I don't, you know, what you come in as, I'm more interested in. And again, injuries, I understand, but that's just simply, that's part of the deal you got to take into account. So
I'm just saying, rewind it, right? Now put that into perspective, right? That Paige Beckers is her. She's her. Now let's bring in the entirety of the games. Can Paige Beckers pull from anywhere on the court? Absolutely. Can she pass with the best of them? Absolutely. Who's the better rebounder?
Well, first of all, I'm just going to say, based on what I just saw in fully healthy and in the last couple of games, she didn't. So she didn't. She deferred. She didn't do any of what you're talking about, including last night in the fourth quarter.
What do you mean she deferred?
She didn't.
She plays on a different type of team.
I don't care what type of team she is. She deferred. I mean, Paris was sitting here screaming at the TV last night saying, what are you doing? Get the ball in your hands. I don't care what your offense is. I don't care nothing. She stayed out of the fray in the fourth quarter, for sure.
Okay, so you think she ran from it?
I'm not saying she ran from it.
You can't walk the fence on this, though, Whit. If you're saying she deferred, you're saying she ran from it.
Well, she ran from it, or the other players did a piss-poor job of getting her involved to the extent that they should have. So take your pick. I don't know. I don't go to their practices.
I would say the same thing happened to Paige Beckers that happened to Juju Watkins when UConn played Southern California. I don't know if you watched that game or not, but Juju was doing everything that she wanted versus UConn, and they weren't consistently getting her the ball to be able to cook. Now, should she have demanded the ball? Should she have been more demonstrative about it? Sure, maybe she should have, but
yeah.
Caitlin Clark doesn't have that problem because everything goes and runs through and around Caitlin Clark in Iowa. So I'm just talking about the way in which their game is played that is different. But if you're asking me to just judge each one individually on who I think is better, I think, and this is obviously an if we don't have two legitimate season-ending injuries on the legs of Paige Beckers, then we're talking about her. We're probably not talking about Caitlin Clark the same way.
Yeah, well, I disagree. I think we, at most, we'd be talking about both, and we'd be having the bigger point that we started the pod with, which is to say, you know, hey, is it really? I think one of the point, I think it goes back to, you know, is this really better basketball with bigger stars than there've been? I feel like the stars of 10 and 15 years ago in women's basketball, frankly, were certainly as good and probably better. And I don't care if you're talking about Tarazi or Rebecca Lobo, or go back, you know, as far as you want with the women's game. I mean, they've been players every bit as good. These guys are, you know, they paid it forward. These players are getting the benefit. So I don't think Paige Beckers would have taken a thing away from Caitlin Clark. I think it would just added to the conversation.
You think that? Okay, so then let's expand the conversation. Then let's. Game included. Paige Beckers as the number one recruit in the nation comes in as the one of the best players in their freshman year, and now NIL hits. And we look at a Paige Beckers who is similarly humble, not a braggadocious kind of girl, really pretty, cute eyes, really marketable, has a real street type of game to her when she wants to. She's getting those endorsements that Caitlin Clark is getting. If a company is out there saying, hey, we've got to, you know, who are we giving these high dollar NIL deals to? They're going to give them the Paige Beckers over Caitlin Clark if they're putting up similar numbers. Now, it doesn't mean that Caitlin Clark doesn't get anything. But when you add in the marketing aspect of it, Paige Beckers is a more marketable brand than Caitlin Clark is if you're looking at them as freshmen when NIL hits. And I think that's a part of what's been able to also increase the star of Caitlin Clark is that, you know, NIL has, or not just Caitlin Clark, but all of women's college basketball, that now that NIL is here, they talk about, they have platforms that they're boosted on more. But I think it also helps Caitlin Clark in who she's had to play over these last couple of years in getting to where she is. It's the magic Larry Bird scenario that is 100% about game, right? Both of them have great games, but then there's that other thing, right? And that can help to elevate a player just as much as what you do on the court can.
Yeah. Well, for me, too much of your focus is on what she was as a freshman. I think that's very intriguing, kind of an aside.
She's still great. She's not just some also-ran. She's one of the best teams in the country. And if they don't get half of their team hurt, they probably boat race Iowa. Like I'm not saying this as if she's like a good story and good for her. She's every bit of a player as Caitlin Clark is, even on two surgically repaired knees. Like I'm not discounting or diminishing anything that Paige Beckers.
I know heard. You're not. I am. I am. I'm just saying, either she's not fully back from the injury, or the teammates and Gino, you know, didn't deliver last night. And from my mind, the round before, I mean, whatever. And meanwhile, Caitlin Clark, her star has risen with less. So I just give more props there. And the NIL thing, I would just say, you know, I don't want to go too far because I like Paige Beck, good player, you know, great player. But I would just say this NIL thing, I think the Bronny James thing is a good example. Like, there's going to be a ton of guys in football and basketball that get big paydays, obviously that are getting big paydays as freshmen. And then all of a sudden, the collectives at these colleges and universities are going to have big time decisions because they're going to realize, like, oh my God, we've got millions invested in this person who's not panning out, and they're going to have to fish and cut bait. I mean, Danny Hurley basically said as much with UConn. He said, you know, one of the things he said about his team playing hard is he said, hey, listen, these guys are getting more than anyone ever got in the history of the game, and you can bet your ass that I'm demanding they play harder for our boosters and for our fans and for blah, blah, blah. That is a, you know, what we know to be a professional environment. And when you don't cut the mustard as a professional, you don't get cut the same slack as maybe you used to as an amateur.
I think that that's a disingenuous comment from Danny Hurley, who I like a lot. Okay. I think that's a BS comment. He was demanding that from players before they ever were getting money. He was that hard and that demanding on people at Buffalo. They weren't getting a dime. He was that hard and demanding on people at Rhode Island. They weren't getting a dime. So to act like all of a sudden now I'm tax mastering, we know who his dad is. Like, that is the most disingenuous comment I have ever heard from a guy that I really, really like. Like, he is not that dude. Sorry, his dad was over there dog cussing. I saw with my own eyes dog cussing and riding dudes into the ground at Jersey St. Anthony's. Like, there's no, we're now going to demand more from them because they're getting money. Like, that dude comes from a lineage of that type of behavior, of that type of coaching.
So I agree on the surface I agree with you. Okay, on the surface I agree with you, but what you're maybe discounting too is, you know, what's been talked about forever and going back in a million years ago when Bob Boyd was coaching at Mississippi State, he famously said it's hard to get someone in a defensive stance who you're paying, right? Who you've committed some dough to. It's hard to get him a defensive stance. So in this day and age, I think what holds true is, you know, yes, I agree with you that Danny Hurley's coached, he's coaching the way he's always coached and this, that, and the other thing. But the kids, some of the kids are coming into it with a different mindset. So therefore, you know, it's just a slightly different dynamic there than has been.
Fair. More pushback. Bronny James is not a good example there.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to throw one out.
Not coming from a collective from USC.
Well, I'm sure he's getting
national endorsements that he had before he ever accepted a scholarship at USC.
Well, I'm sure he did, as do most of the top players have monies coming in before they sign. But I'm certain that USC, as well as any other school, is now going to put some marketing package together to boost that and brand that and build that. So,
and I also think that you're to a certain extent, it's a little unfair to Bronny James when you consider what he, like the traumatic things that he just went through in his life. And then also with Paige Becker, she has not fallen off. Nobody's looking at Paige Becker's as like a bad investment. Oh my gosh, we got to get the money away from Paige. Like,
no, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just stretching out the argument to say, yeah, like when we look at performance and this and that, there's some interesting decisions like that are gonna, you know, that are gonna be being made in both football and basketball.
That's fair. But I think we're here now, right? Like, so we're here,
yeah.
And that, I think that when everyone talked about NIL deals, a lot of the men's players in all of the places where they're getting NIL deals, most of these guys are not getting NIL deals outside of the purview of the school. Most of these guys are getting money from a booster collective that's paying money to a school. With the women, it's different. They're actually getting NIL deals. They're getting name, image, and likeness endorsements. They are out there endorsing products. You're seeing them in commercials. You're seeing them in ads. You're seeing them do social media posts more specific to them and not necessarily to their university or in congruence with their university like you're seeing men. They're actually doing NIL the way NIL is supposed to be done on the women's side. On the men's side, they've just used it and bastardized it as a way to pay players, which I think is interesting.
Right. No. And again, I always say capitalism is finest because the money is that much bigger, the same way then football trumps basketball in that respect. So it's going to be, you know, I'm not going to say dirtier because this is actually cleaner. It's just going to be bigger. Interesting.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, my last NIL comment would, again, not to change the subject too much, but was Zach Edey. I found that interesting.
I was about to go there.
Yeah, that as a Canadian, he's, you know, the American system cuts him out. I think that is incredibly short-sighted by the system in a day and age when the game is so global that both the NBA and major college basketball has so many international players. So now you just limited their ability to make money off themselves. That is awful.
So first off, with, you know, this is a government thing, right?
Yes.
Okay. So if we're doing that, if we know this is a government thing, we can agree that this goes the other way. When American men go to Canada, they don't have the same level of freedoms to earn, and if they do, it's taxed heavily and blah 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 when they're in Canada, right? So this is turnaround is just fair play right here. Like if Zach and my thing with Zach Edey is, my guy, you have an entire country to yourself. Like you have an entire country. You are the biggest basketball name in all of Canada. You're telling me you're not getting off millions of dollars in endorsements when you have an entire country to yourself?
Well, I mean, first of all, here's what Canadians, I mean, basketball has exploded in Canada. So I will say that, but hockey is still their national sport. Always was, always will be. Last time I checked, like multinational corporations and kings, princes, and presidents don't worry about national borders. Okay. There've been people making money with oil and this and that. So there's, you know, I've taught political science, for God's sake. We live in a global world. So, you know, we put up borders and restrictions when it's convenient to put them up. But the biggest players in the world playing for the biggest stakes, those borders, don't give me this border stuff. Like, it is international. And therefore, the place where basketball right now in college can be made money is the States. So therefore, if I don't feel like he should be restricted in his ability to make, I just think it's poor.
I just think it's much different. If we were just talking about an NIL rule, I'm like, change the rule tomorrow.
Right.
But this is a governmental rule, and we know how that rolls.
Yeah. Like, okay. Well, I'm just telling you
the government. That takes an act of Congress. That takes an act of Congress to change the rule.
Right. So Congress should, in conjunction with the NCAA, which make people a are rule. Talking right, where these international players are allowed more latitude. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. And I would just like to go on record as saying I don't think Zach Edey is that marketable. So,
I don't think that's marketable.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a bad misrepresentation of him. I think he's incredibly marketable.
Explain, because we have some time. Like, explain.
Oh, we don't have forever.
But
when he gets to, you know, if in fact the Boilermakers make this redemption tour that I've been talking about since, you know, we started the tournament, then he obviously is the centerpiece of that, and he is a incredibly humble and large human being who, you know, the people in these, if there are two more games, it's just going to build around. So even Purdue is not UCLA, North Carolina, right? They're not a blue blood. So, I mean, just the fact that it's Purdue limits his marketability. If Zach Edey was at Kentucky or Carolina, Duke, I'm not saying your reaction would be different. I respect it too much to say that, but I'm just saying people would have a different feel for Zach Edey. So he's still very much in a prove it mode. And just like, again, the name of this pod, Return of the Bigs, like, he's probably going to have to take them over the top until everyone buys it.
So my entire point is that, like, marketability a lot of times has nothing to do with your game.
Right.
Right. So at the end of the day, these businesses are going to want an ROI, right? We're not talking about him getting more money from the collective at Purdue. If that's what we're talking about, then okay, cool. I acquiesce, right? Purdue's going to pay him more money to stay at Purdue and not go and do a Dickerson. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about where the real money is, which is outside of the collectives. Like, the collectives are actually the short money.
Yeah.
Like, the long money is outside of the collectives, when you are able to get deals on your own with these big companies that are looking to you to have some type of ROI. And all I'm saying is I don't know if he's that marketable. Like, there's an adage that bigs don't sell, right? That's the one thing that Shaq was able to overcome, is that they said bigs don't sell, and Shaq was able to show, hey, bigs can sell. Although Shaq couldn't convince that in shoes, because he never had a really strong foothold on the shoe game, because bigs don't sell in shoes. That's why he zigged when everybody else zagged in the shoe game and went to a low price, affordable shoe that could be, you know, pushed to the kids. And he made tons and tons of money off of that. My point is that Zach Edey is not a personality like Shaq.
Right.
I don't know if he has that level of marketability that Shaq would have. That's all. It's no shade against his game. His game has come a long way. He is the poster child of why you should stay in college, right?
Yep.
Especially if you're a big. And that's what I want to talk about, because this game features the entire landscape of college basketball right now features bigs that are the linchpin to winning for their team. with South Carolina, they've got a couple bigs that are almost unstoppable. And I have no clue how Iowa's going to be able to stop them, because they're big. And she had a really good game against UConn, because everybody for UConn's hurt that could stop her inside. She's not going to be able to do that in South Carolina.
No.
They're in South Carolina.
Yeah, they're in trouble.
Yeah. So, like, but then if you look at NC State boys, they have a big. Purdue, we know the big. UConn, we know the big. The only team that doesn't have a big is Alabama, and that's because we don't consider the young man that transferred from North Dakota. I forget his name right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I can't think of it either.
Yeah, but he the one who helped them beat North, who essentially right. led them to the North Carolina win.
It's not Edwards. It's traditional Edmund, big. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not your traditional big. He's more of a outside inside type of big. He's some shots, but he's more of an outside inside guy. So if you're looking at that landscape and saying, man, bigs are going to decide this game. I think that bigs will be the difference in this Alabama game. I think that the Alabama UConn game, I think the big will be the difference in the Purdue North Carolina State game. I think the big will be the difference. Can Zach Edey continue to put up these 30 and 20 type games, 30 plus and 20 type games versus North Carolina State's big, who's a little bit a little more raw, I guess would be a good word for him, right? A little
raw, but I'll tell you what, man, he's got, for a raw guy, he's got some unbelievable touch. So I don't know if I'm calling him raw.
He's got skills, but I mean just his body. Like he hasn't grown into his body yet. He's still kind of a little bit on the game, not super skinny, but clearly not as filled out as as Edey is to this point. I think that'll be an interesting matchup. If he can neutralize Edey, not like shut him down, but like if he can keep him from going crazy, North Carolina's got a legitimate shot to pull an upset right here.
Yeah, no, they do. The pushback I'd give on that analysis, which means I'm probably dead wrong, but I don't think it's going to be the bigs at all that determine these games. I think it's going to be the shot making. I think the refereeing with regard to the bigs is certainly going to play a role, and that could give one team an advantage over the other if said guy got into foul trouble. But bottom line is, in all those games, I think it's can Purdue take care of the ball and make shots, and then Edey do enough of what Edey does. But I don't think that's the critical factor. North Carolina State, can Burns, kind of orchestrate the way he does, himself, but yet ultimately the other guys make enough shots. Alabama for sure is about shot making, not falling too far behind Connecticut. And then, again, they're all about the analytics of threes and layups and free throws. So the problem that Alabama faces, right, is that Connecticut will beat you any way you want to play the game. So I say with Connecticut, same thing. Clean's great, but it's going to be making shots. So I look at shot making and thus, because of that, defense, if you want, being a bigger key maybe in this tournament than some of the past tournaments at this point.
Well, let's get into it, right? Get into it. Yep. Our season. Our Final Four yearly confidence picks around this time. We like to break it down into six categories. We rank these categories 1 through 4, 1 being we have the most confidence in them, 4 being we have the least confidence in them. And whichever team has the least amount of points when we finish, that is the team that we believe is going to win the entire thing. Now, full disclosure, I think I'm not really too far off in saying that both Coach Witt and I believe UConn's going to win their second championship. However, Witt does have Purdue alive in his bracket. And therefore,
Yeah, look for me to not bet against myself here in some of my analysis. Look for me to find holes in Connecticut and open a door for Purdue.
So I have no dog left in the race because everybody I thought would be around is no longer around right now. So I'm going to tell you exactly what I really think, even though, newsflash, a lot of us are on Connecticut. But it's how we get there that is the interesting part. And as always, we start off with defense. And so with defense, I have obviously UConn rated as number one. I think tenacity, I think the way they get after each other teams, I think that they have, I think that they have an ability to transform their defensive looks based off of what you like to do best and match up that way. They probably have one of the more amenable defenses in all of college basketball, and definitely of these four teams that are left for me. UConn's number one. NC State comes in at two because there's no way they would be here right now if they didn't play elite level defense. Purdue at three simply because of the presence of the big inside, and then Bama at four because you know what I think about the NATO's defense. Not a big fan of it. What do you have?
Well, the only disagreement we've got is a two or three. So I've got Purdue at two because I know about Purdue and Purdue culture. So I've got Purdue two, NC State three, and Bama four. So okay. I've got more stock in the Boiler defense and Painter's lineage to Gene Katie and everything else about. So
not a real argument for me there if you wanted to switch those two. Yep. Offense, what are you rolling with offensively?
Well, I mean, on paper, right? The highest octane offense and efficiency is Alabama. So I'll give Alabama reluctantly one here. I will give Connecticut two. I'll give Purdue three, and I'll give State four.
And that's exactly the way I have it. Bama, UConn, Purdue, and NC State. Although I will say Bama, UConn, Purdue, all really high efficiency offenses. Like they all take a lot of really well. Excuse me. Alabama takes the shots that work for the scheme that they're trying to do. I think that Purdue and UConn take a lot of high IQ shots. Like we got the advantage in down low. We're going to bludgeon you down low until you stop it. And when you try to sink, now we're just going to pass it to wide open shooters. Whereas Bama is like, we're getting a layup and an and one for a free throw, or we're going to shoot these threes.
Like, yeah, I agree with you.
They're playing the game, right?
They're playing their game and with little regard to who they're playing against, seemingly, although he did say, listen, we're not going to simply drive it at, you know, big boy Clinton the way that, you know, in the last game who Illinois Brad Underwood had.
Yeah.
So they're not doing that. But I agree with you that Purdue and Connecticut will adjust their offensive schemes and run a lot of sets to exploit whatever advantages they think they have.
Okay, so guard play, I give the edge to Bama because everything runs through their guards. I have Bama one, I've got UConn two, NC State three, Purdue four, because I still think that that's the Achilles heel of Purdue.
Right. So I think I got to switch out UConn there and give them the edge at the guard spot. So Alabama two, that's tight because I'm counting, Castle obviously as a guard. So kind of more of a wing, but
a lot.
Yeah. So I like Connecticut there. And then Alabama, Purdue, three, State, four.
Gotcha. Bigs. Is there any Are you inclined to try to give UConn the edge in big, or are you going to stick with the player of the year as your number one guy?
Well, I think in order to produce any mathematical chance of my of my confidence picks actually having something to do with, I need to put Purdue with the edge up front. I'm not sure. I think we're going to find out, but I'll go Purdue one. And maybe just with the experience and age, I'll go Purdue one, Connecticut two, State three, Bama four.
And that's how I had it. I thought about UConn as number one. And then I said, nope, I'm just a prisoner of the moment. Like, don't overthink this. If I was choosing a big for college, if I was choosing a college big and I had everybody on the table, I'm choosing the vet. I'm choosing the two-time back-to-back Naismith winner.
I think similar to me stirring the pot with the Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark thing, in any one game, who knows? And so tonight, I think, that's not tonight anyway. But if, in fact, there's a Connecticut-Purdue final, right, then that'll
we'll find out.
Yeah, then that'll be darn interesting because who's to say? So,
and then we have bench. Now here, I thought that the edge clearly went to UConn with bench, and the way in which they've constructed their team, what they've added from the portal to supplement some things, and how that entire thing is shaped up. I have UConn first. I've got Bama second, NC State third, and Purdue is fourth. What do you have?
Well, it depends. I was thinking about this one. I thought in the past, I may be dead wrong, that the bench might have included intangibles. Like I thought we had an intangible piece. So if in fact, when I was looking at this, if in fact I could increase this category to be bench and intangibles, because in some ways the bench is, the bench can be very real, but it also can be almost an intangible, mm-hmm. So if we do that, then I'm going to put State as one. A little bit of a eye popper there. I'm going to take State, because they got to have some reason for being on the frickin' magical run they're on. So I'm going to say that's an intangible that I'm giving their bench. Obviously, the coaches and starting players and DJ Burns, they get a lot of credit here, but I'm going to give the bench with the role of it, with the addition of intangibles to State. I'm going to give Purdue two, Connecticut three, and Bama four. But I know I just changed up the category a bit.
Yeah, no, and I like it. I think if I was to adjust for intangibles, I'd probably still go the same way.
Yep.
Because I think anytime you're able to bring in, like if you're Nate Oates, he brought in what, eight new guys?
Yep.
Right? Like eight new dudes. That means somebody's coming off the bench. Yep. Right? And it also means that there's somebody that may have been starting last year or getting heavy minutes last year that have had their minutes reduced because the big white boy from North Dakota who plays like a beta version of Chet Holmgren he's starting.
You know what I love about this Final Four, and uh-huh. again it happens like to some degree every year, but I think sometimes more than others. Like, there's an incredible storyline. There's an incredible intangible factor, really, with every one of these teams. Every one of these teams, they're all playing for a national championship, of course. But I think, for Bama to be in their first Final Four with a chance at a football school, for Nate Oates, I trust, to have this possibility, that's a great story. For Purdue, the redemption tour, right, lose last year. come back, as I've said, in the Virginia fashion, try to win it. UConn hasn't been a back-to-back since Florida. So, and then North Carolina State, I mean, trying to reincarnate Jimmy Valvano and 83. So like,
how is this not survive in advance too, if they get it done? I'm pretty sure that once they got to the Sweet 16, I'm sure that the documentary cameras just came out of nowhere, right? And said, hey, we got to follow this, because if they get this done, survive in advance too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what. I mean, I think, and again, I'm twisting a little bit here, but that's how I see this thing finishing, with someone other than the Connecticut Huskies winning it, because the storylines are so compelling in other ways, and it is so hard, okay? It is so hard to repeat, right? It's so hard. It's just hard to win, period. And it's hard to repeat. And so I go, and look, if any team has shown they can do it, I mean, it's these guys. So I, you know, again, we've already said it. We know what we kind of expect. I'm saying, guess what? When it goes the other way, we're going to say, huh? How about that? Because, a couple of these teams have, they have some serious mojo going on.
I mean, but that's what we love about the NCAA tournament for the men, right? Yeah. That a lot of times the team that you think is, it's just, they're just going to steamroll it. They don't always steamroll it. Yep. And UConn was the exception to the rule last year. We came in, we all thought UConn was destined to just roll through this thing, and they rolled through it.
Right.
And this year, guess what they're doing? They're rolling through it.
Yeah. Like,
impressively rolling through it.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's a Vegas prop bet on this, but I don't believe they'll, even if they win, I don't believe they'll win two games by double digits, you know? So I believe they are going to find themselves in one game or another in a possession game.
Yeah. I think the problem with that is they are the very definition of quicksand right now, right? You can keep them from scoring, but they'll keep you from scoring while they're not scoring.
Yep.
And then when they start scoring, guess what? They'll still keep you from not scoring. Yep. And if they get it going and you have 2 to 3 possessions where you're just off, that 2-point lead goes to 8, goes to 15 before you know it, like in a heartbeat. They don't waste any time getting you out of there when it's time to get you out of there. And I think that's what UConn does right now better than many teams that I've seen in this new era of men's college basketball. We've got one more category to go, right? And that's coach. It's coach. Okay. I went pretty chalk for coach, right? UConn, Purdue, Bama, North Carolina State. That's my four. I was tempted to put Bama at 4 and North Carolina State at 3, but I didn't. So I've got UConn, Purdue, Bama, North Carolina State.
Yeah, and this is a hard one but I'm gonna put because I'm someone that in recent pods has said. You know, Danny Hurley may be the best coach in the game. In fact, this may be the start of an 80s-like Duke run that he dominates the landscape. That being said, I'm going to, again, give a slight edge to Matt Painter. So I'm going to put Matt Painter at 1. And again, that's probably not a crowd favorite. I can get accused of a lot of things that pick. I will give Danny Hurley the second spot. I'll tell you what, now this and 3 and 4, I agree with you. It's tough. Just because of what he's done. And so this is going to, I'm going to go against my Nate Oates stuff. I am going to move Kevin Keats up to three. I'm going to put for just what he's done in this tournament. And last time I checked, I mean, the TNT guys were killing Nate Oates anyway in Grand Canyon for that. So they've been quiet since that game. They sure have been. But I'll slide Nate Oates, which is, you know, almost blasphemy for me to put him fourth. But I'm gonna put him fourth in as controversial a positioning as me putting Matt Painter ahead of Dan Hurley.
So I have more of an issue with you putting Matt Painter ahead of Dan Hurley than I do of having you put Nate Oates ahead put Nate Oates behind Keats. And the reason being is that, you know, Matt Painter's been at this for a while. Hasn't been able to get the job done.
But we're talking about this year, so we're not.
When we're talking about confidence picks, we're talking about which coach you trust, right? Okay, which coach you trust more. And
I'm trusting this year. It's what I'm trusting this year, taking into account the past. So it's what I'm trusting this year.
Fair.
And that's why, that's how Kevin Keats, because if we weren't taking into account what had happened in the final, in the ACC tournament and then the start of this NCAA tournament, I wouldn't have, you know, Kevin Keats wouldn't. But again, full disclosure, he's a former prep school coach that I coached against. So, I got to give him some love for sure. Can't put him a butt up. So I'm sliding him into three ahead of someone that I have a lot of respect for.
Yeah, Nate Oates, by the way. Nate Oates did the high school to NCAA Division I fast track.
As did Danny Hurley. Three of these guys.
Danny Hurley.
Three of these guys, former high school coaches. So ADs out there have to go look for a few more high school / prep school coaches. If you're listening, I'll listen to offers.
I actually think it's interesting that more, and maybe not like Division I, although you can see that it gets the job done, but why haven't more of your Division III, Division II schools, especially the high dollar schools, you know, those schools that it costs a little more to come here. Why haven't they more of them reached out to prep school coaches to become, especially boarding school prep school coaches, to become their head coaches? Because it seems like a natural transition. You already understand that world and that landscape.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a good discussion for another pod. I would simply say that, you know, it fits into the same category. Like, all these levels are different. So I do believe, I am a guy that believes like a good coach is a good coach. So level to level, high school to college, college to pro, you know, elementary to high school, sport to sport to some degree. Guys that can coach and gals that can coach. Mm-hmm. So I believe that, but I think, obviously, particularly in the past 25 years or more, like, the levels tend to hire from within, and some of that is, some of that makes sense, and some of it's just is kind of safety, you know, to be able to say, I didn't see that one coming, et cetera, et cetera. So
nepotism and the way we've always done it is the death of innovation.
Yeah, true.
I'm gonna leave you with that. I've got the numbers tabulated over here, by the way.
Okay.
Obviously, I've got UConn 8 points. Bama actually comes in second for me with 15 points. Purdue 17 points. NC State 19 points. For you, as much as you tried to get Purdue to be number one, you actually have them as number two. I think it was where you kind of poo-pooed them on the guard side, you know.
Yeah, I probably should have just, you know, lied through my teeth there and propped them up.
I mean,
there,
you did a lot of lying right here, so I think it's cool.
Right,
you did a good amount of lying. Right. UConn was 11. Yeah. Purdue is 12.
Okay.
Right? You tried to make it happen.
Yeah.
By the way, Nate Oates we trust, you trust him the least. He is 19 and NC State is 18.
Okay, I like it. I like my picks. My picks allow for a UConn-Purdue.
Absolutely.
You know, which is what, you know, obviously everyone thinks, but I and so it could be a bad call game. My picks open the door for a tough call to decide the game.
Yeah, so my picks, they look as if UConn should run away from Bama in the end. Yeah. And then Purdue at 17 and NC State at 19 should be a pretty tight game. Yeah, so we'll see how it all unfolds, ladies and gentlemen. We are T-minus a few minutes until these games start popping off, and we are delighted to have brought this to you live on all of my social medias. But make sure that you go to Spotify. Make sure you leave a comment. This podcast will be up for you to like go back and see how right we were, how wrong we were. Go back on Spotify, leave us a comment. Make sure that you're locked in for next week. It doesn't stop with the NCAA tournament because we are getting into NBA basketball season. Also, baseball is off and running. The Yankees have lost two games so far, right? So 162-0 is out the window, but 160-2 is still in play. 160-2 still in play. The Celtics have already locked in the number one overall record in the NBA, which means they'll be the top spot in the East. The Lakers, as you guys know, I'm a Lakers fan. Witt's a Celtics fan. The Lakers are fighting to try to get to number six and avoid the play-in game, but that's going to be a hard road to hoe. They actually just won. They just beat Cleveland today. As we speak, that final came in. So they're playing some of the best basketball down the stretch, by the way. Just not for nothing. LeBron and crew, and I should split that and say Anthony Davis and crew, because Anthony Davis has looked like top five in the league. Anthony Davis. We'll talk about that next week. Make sure that you join us. And all, Whit, anything you got for the people as we get out of here?
No, I got enjoy the games. Good to see you in sunny Florida. Excited about tonight and
tomorrow too.
And tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping that Iowa can put up a fight, but I just don't see it.
I'm in agreement with you.
And you know who I'm rooting for, if you don't know.
Dawn Staley.
That's right.
All right.
You know, it's a lot when I've talked about Dawn Staley so much that you just know that anytime I'm referencing the women's game, I'm trying to get Dawn Staley involved in some kind of way.
The answer to the question is always Dawn Staley.
Always. The dime, baby. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LaJour. Follow him on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, at Whit LaJour. Follow me at Gene Clemens. Until next time, you all stay blessed, stay safe, and enjoy the games. And if you are out enjoying the games with a beverage, hey, spring for Uber. Keep yourself safe. Till next time, peace.